Herein Mycelium, Mr. Dan M. Take it away.
Thanks, Bill. Good evening, guys. Boy, a flashback with Bill here. I mean, Bill was once my sponsor along the way, but I'm going to tell my journey as it began and really what got me here. And I think a lot of that was genetic. You know, I'm a son of an alcoholic who was a son of an alcoholic. And, unless I didn't touch a drop, I was going to become an alcoholic once I put liquor into my system. I truly believe that today. I remember hearing stories when I was young about my dad last seeing his father in the 30s. And it was during the Depression, and he was what they called back then a hobo on the rails. And they saw him on a train or something, and he gave a knife to my dad and a pocket watch to his brother, which were really probably the only possessions he had at that time. And it wasn't thereafter, soon thereafter, that he saw the children that for the last time that he died by alcoholism. You know, when I was a kid, they always said, oh, he got pneumonia during the Depression. But as I got older, the truth came out. He just drank himself to death. They found him in hay over in the Hanford area. And so my dad was raised by a stepfather, treated him like a stepson. It wasn't until I grew up myself having kids, I realized that my dad did the best he could do. And at the time he was drinking the way he was drinking, I told myself at that time I'd never be like that son of a bitch. Because when I was younger, I was scared to death of him. When I got older, I despised him. And I promised I would never, never. Well, that went on until I was about 17 or 18 in high school. So I didn't start young. In fact, I hated it. So a bunch of my cousins were getting married at that time. And they had me as one of the groomsmen at the wedding. So as a groomsman at the wedding, part of our job after the wedding was over was to pour champagne for all the guests, right? So, and it was my cousin who was a female. It was her wedding, and there was a lot of cute girls there, you know? And because of the way my head was and the hate I had in me, I was a very shy person that didn't really get out and be amongst people who generally have the opposite sex. So long story short, as I was pouring alcohol for these people, you know, and I was just sweating it, looking at these girls I wanted to go talk to. I went, one for you, maybe one for me, maybe one for you, maybe one for me. And then I realized alcohol made me feel hip, slick, and cool, and Superman to boot. Debonair as well. So long story short, I went out and asked a bunch of those girls to dance, and boy, it was quite a night. It was after that I realized that alcohol was my super elixir, and maybe it was okay to drink. And from that time on, anytime there was a party that was whatever, I had to go where there was alcohol or was to use. So I remember after that, you know, I was in construction at the time. I was working for my dad, and he was a contractor, and we were doing the electrical on the house. And back in those days, you could get anything done for a 6-pack of beer or a 12-pack of beer or whatever, you know, and to get the guys a little overtime and go buy some pizza and beer, we'd keep working to get the job done. And one night we were out there drinking on the job site. And again, alcohol's around my life now. It's part of me. So we're out there and the owners come up. There was a stack of Budweiser cans out in front of their house that it was pretty amazing. I'll never forget, this owner's come up and goes, this is the house that my wife built. So, I mean, that was my life. And fortunately, you know, plumbers would leave there and others, and they'd get pulled over for DUIs, but I never did. I was blessed not to do that. So, and soon after this period of time, I got married, and my wife is a normie, still is, so I made sure that when we did things with people, the guys, and it was mainly construction buddies at the time, we'd go out and go swimming or something, and the girls would stay inside, and we'd be putting down the beer as quick as we could outside. It continually got worse and worse, to the point where I'd go to work, and then, you know, somewhere around 5 o'clock, somewhere, I would start drinking during the day, and luckily I'd made it, taken home, and I'd go in and drink some more and crash on the couch. That went on for a number of years until in the meantime, we'd had a couple of kids, my boy was getting to be a teenager, or a little less than a teenager, I can't remember, but he was about that age, I was laying on the couch and my wife came in and shoved in, and she was out playing catch with my son in the front yard and wanted to play baseball. She goes, "I'm not going to be father and mother to this kid. Now get your ass out there and play ball." And it was from that point there that our marriage was on the rocks. So I promised at the time to go talk to the pastor at our church, which is Christ Lutheran Church now, where there's a bunch of meetings. And he told me, he says, I was humble and lovable to my wife to keep her around. Went to meet with the pastor, and he says, we have a Friday night meeting, AA meeting here. I just have to talk for a while. You might want to check it out. So I go, oh, great. I'm going to go to this AA, and there's going to be a bunch of alcoholics looks like they just came out of the Oleanders and they're long trench coats and all that. And that's what I thought an alcoholic was, even at the age of 30 or whatever I was. So I said, okay, I'll go. So I end up going to the meeting, and when I walk in, I see a guy that's at the parts store that I'm always getting electrical parts from, and he was standing right across the room. So I said, God, someone I know. And I realized when I looked around, it was just normal folk. It was people like me. And not only that, as we introduced ourselves, there was Dr. So-and-so, and this guy was a lawyer, and I'm going, what in the world is this? It's nothing that I anticipated AA to be at all. I was desperate enough at that time, when I walked in that room, to take AA seriously. And through the years, as I've been through the years, there's two things that have driven me, and that's inspiration and mainly desperation. And I was desperate enough to ask this guy that was on the, that I knew from work, to be my sponsor. His name was Ralph at the time, and he took me through the steps. I was willing to do whatever it took to get this done because I didn't want to lose my family. I was desperate. So he took me through the book, and we did the steps, it was the first time I went through, and we did them verbally. There was no writing or anything. We just would meet every week and go so far in the book and then kind of go over it and take the appropriate step at the time. That's the way I perceived it. But it was enough to me with the desperation that I had to stick. So I was going to 3 meetings a week. I made sure one was a book study, and we went through years and years of this. And then came a time when my son was going to Mount Winnie High School, and he was on the freshman football team. He was on the JV football team, and they play on Friday nights. And that was my home group. But I thought, man, you know, I got to go to my kid's game. Come on now. Because after that time that my wife told me to go out there and play ball with these kids, I got involved, and I actually coached in Little League for my son. So, you know, again, that desperation and everything, I went all in. I went all in with my family, and I went all in with AA. So getting back to when he was playing football, and I said, I got to see my son, so I'll just cut out the Friday eating. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is like breathing to me. I mean, it's just I get up every day, and I go through the routine and the prayers, and I go on about my business. And God bless me to take that the craving for alcohol away from me. But when I stopped at one meeting, you know, my wife goes, you know, I need your help on the Tuesday night that you go as well. You know, you're doing great. I need your help. I'll let you have the one meeting, but I really need your help because my daughter was coming up then, you know. And so I said, okay. And where I'm kind of going here is I slowly pulled away from what kept me sober. This was 10 years in, right? So this is all happening in my mind prior to anything else happening, right? So it was a wedding anniversary or a birthday or something for my wife. And she was an Army and she drank wine. She's only drank wine. And it never bothered me at the time. So her favorite winery was Justin Wine. And this is over by Paso Robles, up in the hills of Rock, which full of wineries now. And so we went over there and we stayed in the cottage that they had. They had a restaurant there where they had a beautiful meal that I wanted to get for this event. And so we're eating and everything's going well. And there's this big table of people right in the middle of this restaurant. And all of a sudden, the guy gets up, and he takes his spoon, and he clinks the glass, and he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to know I am the owner of this wine. And you are in for a treat tonight." He goes, "I've got clients here at the table, and I'm going to share all my finest wines, and I want to invite you all to join in." So I'm thinking, I'll join in. And he said, "First off, we're going to start with the champagne that was just served at the White House a month ago." Champagne served at the White House. So it's going around and it's going around. And I said, "What in the hell? When am I ever going to get a chance to take champagne served at the White House?" So when they came around, I put my glass out. And my wife's looking at me, I said, I got this. So she figured I knew what I was doing. So I tasted the champagne and it tasted pretty good. It wasn't bad. You know, I didn't crave grabbing the bottle of green beer or anything, you know. But then he stood up again and he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen," he says, "I'm going to serve you my gold medal wine from the Sacramento Fair Wine Festival." I said, "Gold medal wine? When am I ever going to get a chance to get a free glass of gold medal wine?" Well, needless to say, he went through all his varieties. So I was pretty bummed when I left there. And everything was fine, you know, we kind of laughed it off. But when I went home, it was different. The fuse was lit. So immediately I didn't run out and drink everything in sight, but the fuse was lit. And the fuse was in here. And I remember coming home and it was ABC News. And heart problems are in my family, right? So ABC News, special report. If you have a glass of wine a night, it keeps your heart well. There's something in there that helps with your heart. I said, I'll be damned. I think I'll try that. Right? They said on ABC News that I should have a glass of wine a night, and it will keep me healthy. Well, we all know where it went after that. You know, it got worse and worse. To back to where I was drinking the pint or half pint of vodka, where I was the minute I went to see the pastor for the first time. And why do I bring this up tonight? I always do this at my birthday meeting because we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it is too much for us if we aren't under the protection of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way I raveled it back up is going back to the same meetings I was going to. But the problem was it wasn't like the first time. It was harder. Because I wasn't as desperate at that time because I had made amends with my family and everything. And so I'd go to the meetings and I'd stay sober for a while and I wouldn't tell anybody. And then I finally got a new sponsor and kind of went through the moves, but I was still drinking when I got home. And I bring this up because there's a lot of us, especially these days, that seem to have that same thing happen to them. And then I started keeping the vodka out in the garage because I didn't want the wife to know. So our washer and dryer were out in the garage. So I was telling my wife, I said, honey, just give me the wash. I'll go out and get the wash done for you. You can just worry about feeding the kids and stuff. I'll take care of this. And so I'd go out there and wash, drink, right? I'd have everything, and I'd have my regular bar set up out there while doing the wash. Well, this went on and on, and this is burned in my mind. You, my son, who was a teenager at that time, comes out in the garage, looks at me and says, Dad, who do you think you're fooling? They know. And that made me feel so bad at the time that I focused back to go to meetings again. And sometimes I go to meetings and I sit out in the parking lot drinking a beer and tell my wife I went to the meetings. So I was at one of these meetings one time, and it might have been Christ Lutheran, I can't remember, but there was a guy named Ron who's no longer with us as well, but he came over and knocked on my window. I rolled the window and he says, Dan, do you want to save your ass or do you want to just save your face? And I thought about it and he says, come on, let's go to the meeting. And there's another miracle in my life. A member of this program reaching out to me, everyone knows what you're doing when you're doing that stuff. And he brought me back into the meeting. And it got me back in for 5 years, I think, at that time. But then my head told me, you know, I'm back in action here. I got this. I can just go into that Friday meeting. I'll be cool. It's all good. You know, I just go check in, like, you know, get your hands stamped and you're good to go, right? And you know, I've already had 2 diplomas from AA, so, you know, I'm working on my master's program, right? So, long story short, things started to turn again. And this time I got busted and my wife showed me the door. She goes, you show me, you can get some time together. And maybe you've talked about getting back in. So I'm scared to hear this. I said, you know, the kids are older. They're either senior, junior in high school or out of high school. So she didn't have the kids to keep her there like she did the first time. So my ass was on the road, you know. And so I went over and stayed at my sister's house, which they deadly hated. And started going back to meetings. And I think this might have been about the time that this gentleman right here, I approached to be my sponsor. Now, it didn't really work, but it wasn't his fault. It was my fault. because I had to get that desperation or inspiration to really get back to into this book. So, sorry to say, I went in and out and in and out until 8 years ago, where I, once again, was desperate. My wife throws me in the car and says, "You're going to a meeting. Where are you going tonight?" And I remembered, you know, Teddy, we were at the ice house, I think, then, weren't we? And Teddy had his meeting over there on Bridge Street. And so I called Teddy in desperation. I asked him to help. And we went, I met him at Primary Purpose. And going to, in there and going to that meeting, I once again realized the desperation I was going through. You know, and I told Teddy, you know, I said, "I'm at the last house on the block." And not only am I in the last house on the block, I'm painting the floor in the bedroom and I'm in a corner. So I had enough desperation at the time to do exactly what he told me to. And it went to exactly what I needed at that time. And that was to take this book and go through it page by page. So what turned out to be the Primary Purpose meeting is a meeting, but it's a book study meeting. And we went through page by page, and I just happened to be there right when, you know, God had nothing to do with us. Right when we were starting the book, right? So we're starting the book and we're going through all these forewords and this and that and the other, and then all of a sudden we get to the doctor's opinion. You know, and when I had gone through with my sponsors and stuff, we always went through the first 164 pages. So that's where I based AA as, the first 164 pages. Not the XXB. That's not a number. So when I got to the doctor's opinion is where I really read, and I'm not a good book thumper now and quoter, but I realized that what it takes to get this program the way God meant it to be was to have a psychic change. And for me to have a psychic change had to be through my higher power, because I proved many times since 1994, when I first walked in here, that if I don't have constant contact with my higher power and the members of Alcoholics Anonymous and the book study, I tend to drift. Because I heard some old timers, I was blessed to see some of the old timers here. They're on the brick walls over at the alarm club and with black lines around them. And I remember this one guy would say, "You know, I got to keep going to meetings because I'm an alcoholic. And I've got a little hole back here in my head." And as I go through the week, all this shit that I took in at the meetings leaks out. So if I don't keep going to meetings, then I revert right back to where I was. And that is so truthful. And, you know, I'll fast forward. And I one thing that going through Primary Purpose and falling through there, that Teddy made you promise, "I'll take you through this, but you have to work with sponsees. You have to work with others. Or I will take you through this. You have to pass it on." So I got a number of sponsees, and I worked with them. Some of them were good. Some of them I had to say, "You need to go finish what you're doing, and when you're ready, come back and see me," you know. And I remember this guy told that to, and he goes, you're keeping me sober." I said, "Dude, I can't even keep myself sober. It's my God that keeps me sober. You need to go out and find that higher power that will keep you sober. I can't keep you sober." And I never saw him again. But as I was going through there, I finally got a sponsor that I had originally met over at the Ice House years before. And it was his name was Johnny. And You know, I was trying to help him there, and again, he went away. And I worked with some other people, and it was like 4 or 5 years later, he showed up again, and he came to me and asked me again. And his name, I can say his name now because he's deceased, is Johnny Hyde. And Johnny and I became best friends, you know. And we worked together, we went to meetings together, and he was keeping me sober because it also kept me in the book with him. And that's another beauty of being a sponsor. You get to go back to the book again and again, so that that little hole that's leaking gets refilled. So I was going, you know, and even when COVID first started, we get together and do lunch and do separate things. But he'd moved over to Solarium, was going to meetings over there, and we kind of separated for a while. And then things got really tight, and we got really isolated because of COVID and other things. Long story short, Johnny went back out. And we went through some efforts and got him sobered up again, friends of mine. And you know, we went through all the rehab, got him spun dry and all that, got him back. He just told me, he says, "I'm just so lonely, I don't know what to do." So he went back out again. And this time we lost him. And that was such a blow to me at the time that if it wasn't for my God, I wouldn't. I think I would have gone back out, because not only did I lose my sponsee that really kept me going in this program, I lost my best friend. And the reason I share this is that I need to share that because I need to get people to work with again, because with me, that's the only thing that's going to keep me sober from here on out. And I needed this meeting to say that, because I think this leak is still leaking, you know, and I do go to a couple meetings a week, but, you know, I need to get where I'm working back in the book again, because ultimately it's this book. Now, I can open this up and read it. We all could, but most of the time it's gathered dust on my desk or right next to my desk, or when I ask to speak and I kind of have to go through it again, right? So what I'm saying is you can do this the easy way, like I did the very first time, and got into the routine. The routine is really, for me, necessary in this program as well, to get into the routine where you're going to your meetings, you're meeting with people either before or after, and you're living in the program. And I was blessed to be around at that time with, when my father got cancer. Now, what you have to remember, this is the guy I swore I never was going to be like, but I was exactly like at that time. And I was able to take him to the cancer doctor and the radiation and all the stuff we went through. And for the first time in a long time, my dad said, "I love you." If it wasn't for this program and sobriety, I'd never got to hear that. And before he passed, we made complete amends with each other. I'm sorry. And that was the biggest gorilla off my back. And that's another thing this program gave me. So making amends to people to get the monkeys and the gorillas off your back. And I was able to be around a few years later when my mom passed away. So God, even though I haven't done this like the book says to do it, and do it wholeheartedly, God, give me those times of grace when I needed to be there for the magic to happen. And I don't recommend that you guys do it this way. I recommend you do it like this guy does. and keep going and keep involved and do stuff like this and to sponsor people. Because there's the easier software way, which is do it like do it like it is written in the book, or you can, where you're going down the highway, you know, God put out in front of me this glorious highway with no bumps, like no speed limit, smooth sailing. But I drive about a mile and I park and I start walking through the old meanders again. Because I think I can do it on my own. You know, first I grab the wheel, then I pull the boat, right? And I think I can do this on my own, but I can't. And I don't want you to go to the many times like I've had to go through, the many sponsors I've had to go through. But always keep an eye on God. I swear that's what kept me around. And kept coming back until people knocked on my window and said, come and join me. This program works. But it takes action. It takes your action. It takes my action. It takes all of our actions. And I hope and pray you can do it like when I started, but not fall off the horse and have to get back onto it for a few times. Now, I'm truly blessed God has given me 4 grandchildren that never seen me take a drink, ever. And so I hope to honor him and be able to do this and pass it on to others. Like this program was designed. Thank you very much.
Right on, Dan.
Hey, congratulations again on 2 days and 8 years of continuous sobriety. That's fantastic.
Thank you, Lord.
So we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. Tonight is the last Sunday of the month, and so we're going to stop at 7:45 tonight, have a quick business meeting, and then if we have time, we'll resume the meeting before we close out. So... 8:45. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. So, yeah, we already had the business meeting. Aren't you here? So, anyway, so we've got a list of folks here. There's online and in person. And again, just ask that you be mindful of the time you use because we only have a short amount of time for everybody tonight.
What time is it right there?
It's 8:18.
Okay. You know who I'm going to call on first? Because he was so big in keeping me focused, is Bill.
How about that? I'm an alcoholic. My name is Bill Hatzman.
Hey, Bill.
So I really wholeheartedly congratulate Dan on his sobriety. Dan was in the rooms of AA, as you've heard him talk about, when I got here. And so I was actually here when much of that story that you were telling was happening. I think I was here when you had the presidential champagne. That might have happened just before my time, but it was close. I was very new. And so Dan has been a member of AA as long as I have. And I've always found him to be, a nice guy. He's a likable guy. And when he asked me for help, we got engaged. We got into the book and started doing things. And it didn't really quite work out for us. But I got to learn a really valuable lesson, and especially with the perspective that I have now. I got to tell you, Dan is a really good AA member. Dan is a servant to our fellowship. He's got, I see him regularly taking people to meetings and picking people up. And some of the toughest people in AA I've seen him really embrace and care for. And so, you know, what that really tells me is that it's important for me to have clear in my mind that, first of all, Dan said this very well. That as a sponsor, I don't have the power to keep somebody else sober. I can't even keep me sober, right? And on my very best day, I can be a force for good. I can be an influence for better. But I don't have the power to keep anybody sober. And by that same token, I also don't have the power to make somebody get drunk. I think that can be a dangerous topic to spend much time on, so I won't stay there. But I will just say this: I do feel that it is my responsibility to make AA look as appealing, as attractive as possible, because I've been in a situation when I was perilously teetering on my sobriety, and I had some people approach me in a way that really pushed me away from AA, and I'm not going to blame them for my drinking, but they certainly could have behaved differently and maybe not aided me in rationalizing my drinking again. You know what I mean? So I really think it's important to do our best to make AA look attractive, and the results of that are you know, in God's hands and in the hands of the person who, you know, does or doesn't want to stay sober. Or actually, it's really a lot less about whether they want to, but whether they will, whether they'll do all the things that they need to stay sober. I remain powerless today over alcohol. I don't have power to make, I can't rely on my ability to decide whether or not first drink is a good idea. And so it's easy. It would be really easy for me to rationalize and justify, the first drink. And the other thing that I know about my condition is that once I take the first drink, there is very little in the way of control that I would have that would allow me to drink at a moderate level. Maybe just like Dan says, I might have a couple of drinks one night. I might be able to kind of drink lightly for a little while, but I tell you what, I know from my own experience that would not last long, and I would be back at my cups again. I would be living very dangerously. And so it's important for me to not get mixed up about that. I'm really glad to have you in our fellowship. I think you're a great member of AA, and congratulations again on your performance.
Thank you, Bill. Anthony. Hey, Anthony. Okay. Is there anyone online that has a burning desire that would like to share? We'll leave it at that right now, and then I'll start calling names.
My name is Matt, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, there's Matt. Hey, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Eric. Good to see you, Matt.
Good to see you, too, Dan. Thank you for your share. It's good to see you. I'm grateful to hear you. You are a dear friend. Grateful to see you. I'm grateful to see everybody, and thanks for leading us tonight. Thank you, Leah, for being there for me, and David for working some magic on that microphone. You know, this is a community thing that we do. We're not to be in this fellowship alone or even be sitting by ourselves in a room full of people. And I certainly do. I have a history of that. I'm actually quite good at being alone in a group of people. Because I'm self-centered and I'm self-willed and I'm self-fearful, and I just think that at times the world is out to get me, and nothing could be further from the truth. I've learned in my walk, in my sober life, that a great majority of my fears never come true, and my fears as I grow in sobriety, as I grow in, hopefully, as I mature spiritually, my fears mature also. I don't worry or I don't fear irrational things, the things that I have kind of honed down, or that they, I won't say fears, but the things that I need to pay attention to have become very clear to me in my life. And in my drinking years, my thinking was very, very addled. I couldn't make a good decision for myself in my drinking years. And even for the first 5 years of my sobriety, I had a pretty awful detox, and it took a while for me to get to the point where I could even just function. But I knew at a certain point, and Dan was talking about a relapse, and I'm hearkening back to my relapse. I remember I was able to put 9 months together just by sheer willpower, white-knuckling 9 months, and I couldn't tell you what it was that triggered the next drink, but I know one thing. It wasn't worth it, and, well, I could say a couple of things. And when I took that next drink, and I was right out of the bottle, baby, after 9 months sobriety, and I watched the bubbles go up that bottle, and I remember having this thought, this is going to have a high price. I remember being willing at that time to take that high price. Well, I don't have that price to pay anymore, so I have to stay on the straight and narrow. At any rate, I'm going to pull up there. Thank you for so much for letting me be a part of the program, and thank you for letting me share. I love you guys, and stay the course. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, Matt.
Now I'll flip it on you guys. Is there anybody out there that would like to share before I start calling names?
Good day, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
Steve, you can share. You can make a lot of ways. But at the end when you said, still going out like I did, but I did, I think I did a little bit more than you. You know, I made it so far, and then go back out, made it. And always hold back a little bit of something. I worked steps every time I came into the program. And every time I thought, you know, there's that self-centered, self-seeking, selfish, you know, these things that I didn't want to tell nobody. Just a little bit of something. And somebody always would tell me, you gotta get it all out. I'm like, nah, I'm not all of it. I'm not going to hold this back, I'm going to hold that back, I'm not going to share this, I'm not going to speak about this, I'm not going to write this down. Nobody needs to know this. And all I can tell you about my final thought is those little empty things, I thought they were empty things or execution things. And they always had sense to take me back. So I went back to the store. Always me, and I'm going to follow every time. You know, I'm going to go here in August, and you know, it feels good. This time, you know, I've made it to the 12 steps, I've worked with others, and I honestly get a sense of freedom. I don't have these little empty things in the back of my head anymore, or on my shoulders that are weighing me down, because I got it all out this time. I made sure I got it all out this time. My step volume heart, my core step, my step step, my resentments, my limbs, and just everything, through the whole process, and I didn't want to get back. Not a bit, not even that little tiny thing that I did back when I was 8 years old. I got out of here, you know, I got out of my sponsor. I feel really solid, you know, in my sobriety this time, in my work that I've done, going through the steps, going through this program, being a service, has helped me tremendously in a lot of ways, you know, just being a part of, feeling part of, I'm like, Like before, I was still like an outsider, a guy just sitting in the back, or sitting in the front, or sitting off to the side. Just nobody ever seen me, you know? And I'm still like a guy sitting in the back, but I don't know part of it. You know, it's still things, you know, like, starting out with coffee, and, closing up or whatever. And, now I'm the director of the Wednesday night Valley meeting. You know, I get to open the place up, and then close it down, it's crazy, I never thought I'd be doing anything like that. I feel like I have a sense of accomplishment today. I know I'm not where, I'm not the point where I'm getting like a real fat head or anything like that. I'm definitely not in the spot that I've ever been before in my life. But, I look in the mirror and I like myself. I think I love myself today. You know, the man that I'm becoming. I'm definitely not where I want to be, but I'm definitely not where I was.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Dave. I hate people that share after they said they're done, but I want to say something that just came to me is that, and it was a big deal. I got emotional and kind of forgot this, but what I was able to do when I shared about my dad, and this is so important, I was able to forgive him and realize he did the best he could do with the child that he had. And, you know, forgiving these people that you do amends with and it works both ways is a gift from God. And I just wanted to share that. Dylan. There's a Dylan. Dylan?
It's Dylan.
Dylan, okay.
I just want to listen to that.
Thanks, Dylan. Okay. Let's see. Craig B. online. Still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Would you like to share?
Sure. Hey, Dan, I really appreciate your share tonight. It was very inspirational, and I could really relate to a lot of your story. You know, I'm really grateful to be here tonight, and, you know, I'm about 70 some days being sober now. This go round, been out and about before and had numerous bouts of sobriety. But this time I'm grateful for it. I now I can relate to you as I can really understand, you know, name that desperation, you know, when you're talking about, you know, maybe you weren't quite ready yet, you know, to stop drinking. And you had to go back out. I could really relate, and, you know, I didn't know if I had another recovery in me, but, getting that desperation really has, made me find and come to AA and, really, look for the similarities instead of the differences, kind of like you shared, you know, I was coming here, you know, my preconceived ideas of AA was, you know, buddy different than me. And, when I got here and started looking for the similarities, I really found, that I'm just like everybody else in these rooms. And this is my home. So I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful, to hear your share tonight. And, I'll take another 24.
Thank you.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you. Thank you.
Darren. Hey, Darren.
Look, I don't have really too much to share. I know that I was good today. I'm glad to be here to hear stories that help you feel connected and also in my struggles and successes. It's nice to know that God has a plan for us and works things in favor of those who really want to change and be different. It's nice to do this. You know, it's a blessing no matter how you look at it. If you're not a believer in God, after you complete the steps, or even if you don't complete the steps, so there is a spiritual awakening that happens to those who really open up with that willingness to try something different. To let go and just flow with power that is. I mean, you know, it's how to say that well. You know, before when I wasn't getting any message, it was kind of like electricity. You have insulators, which are like resistors, semiconductors, and, you know, conductors. You know, today, I'm not a resistor. I'm not even a house devil. I'm a full-on conductor.
Right on, man.
Yeah. So I'm with the flow, and glad to be here. Everyone I see, everything from when I'm using, I don't put nothing in half-step, and I go all in, and I just feel blessed to be here because I'm my own worst nightmare. No one can ruin me like I can.
Mm-hmm.
No one. God willing, that wasn't the case, so here I am. And I'm just doing the best I can. And, I appreciate y'all, and I hope that this program helps you with your goals and dreams and wants in life. Does that work? Thanks,
Sharon.
Thank you. How about Suze?
I'm Suzanne. I'm all of this.
Hey, Suzanne.
I'm probably just going to have to listen.
Okay. Well, thank you. Okay. Omar, are you up? Online Omar. Okay.
Yes, hello.
There you are. Good.
And I'm an alcoholic.
We can hear you.
Yeah, I was struggling to hit the unmute button for some reason. My phone was just going off. But that's fine. glad to see everyone here. The stories are fantastic. And, well, my story is pretty much like everyone, a lot of people that I know, you would never want to admit we're alcoholics. I've quit for a period of time. But, now, you know, I don't want to say I was forced to come to these meetings, cause I kind of did have a couple options, but I went along with the judge and said, yes, I'll show up. And, inside, I felt like, hey, you know, this is what you need. This is going to get you right. And, it's only been since the 7th since I haven't drank, but, it feels like forever and I feel great. I mean, yesterday was Saturday, the day before was Friday. So I attended meetings on those days. I didn't realize it until yesterday. It was around 7 o'clock. I go, hey man, you know, I'm not out there having a beer. I'm not out there, you know, blacking out and stuff like that. So, that felt great. And, I look forward to buying the big book. I was directed to a free, portion of the book online. So I gotta check that out. And I want to be able to, contribute and, read like everyone else and speak. I'm definitely capable of doing that, but, I do get nervous, especially if I haven't gone over the material. So, I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to be sober. And I look forward to more days sober, especially since, this commitment, I guess I'd call it, to trying to be sober happened around the time my mother almost passed away. And, that's another wake up call there too. So I feel that, you know, this being sober is going to do a good job. I mean, it's going to do me well with my relationship with my mother. I won't get angry at her and tell her, come on, mom, you don't need a walker. Come on, mom, do this right. Now I understand that it was probably alcohol, which was causing me, to get frustrated with people and, upset with, society overall and stuff like that. But now I've been forced to take public transportation because my car broke down and I'm enjoying it. It's weird. It's hot, bumpy. The rides are bumpy. I have to travel like 15, 16 miles just to go see my mom at the rehab center in Visalia. And, I see the people. I don't, you know, before I used to shake my head at some of the people that I see, going down Dinuba Boulevard, you see all the homeless people laying on the sidewalks and everywhere. And, I'm sure they have drinking issues too, but, I feel like this being sober has opened up my eyes again, and I'm seeing clearly, I'm thinking better, and I'm no longer like thinking, oh, you know, let's get this done and we'll have a drink, you know. So that's good. I'm happy about that. And, definitely, just ready to, see how things change for me. I mean, I wouldn't say they were bad, but they could definitely be better. I mean, especially my relationships with, people in society and even my own family. So I have a couple of relatives I plan on visiting, which I probably would have just said, F them, you know, they once talked about me, you know, or this or that. But all that's done, and I'm ready to, keep attending meetings, participating, hopefully. Hopefully I'll have things to contribute. And, I'm also ready to just, forget about drinking. I mean, I know it's gonna be hard. I hope, I'm hoping I don't relapse, but, which is why I feel like these meetings are so important. Just to keep me on the straight and narrow and keep me focused. Cause I know it's a struggle. Cause I have quit before, but, once I came back to drinking, oh my gosh, forget about it. That's when the blackout started. So, I am looking forward to, just more meetings, more contributing more, and just, getting to know everyone. And hopefully all of you guys will keep coming back and we could all move forward together. Thank you.
Thanks, Omar. How are we doing on time?
We've got a few more minutes.
David, I know you're over there with all the stuff. Would you like to share? Or can you?
Yeah. David, alcoholic.
Hey, David.
Thank you, Dan, for your share. My story also includes relapse, a couple of them. And there is the fact that I had relapsed. There was a huge amount of humiliation there, right? But I did learn things about myself that I did not know before. And specifically the most recent one, it hadn't dawned on me that I was feeling sorry for myself. That you remember Gary Toon,
mm-hmm.
right? And he used to always say, it's not a slip, it's an on purpose.
Yeah.
Right? And I had it on purpose. And it was after the fact that I realized, oh, I was feeling sorry for myself. And the reality is today, my life is so much better than it was in 2016 when I showed up here. I have no reason to feel sorry for myself. Except I'm an alcoholic. I'm selfish, self-centered. I can go there, right? But I'm thankful that my higher power, and my higher power hears, but when I'm being self-pitying, right? When I'm being self-pitying, I do hear my higher power kind of, there's, you know, my perception is it's a little bit of a chuckle. It's like, come on, dude. Really? Really? Your life is so much better now. Really? And I'm thankful for that, right? Because the reality is, I'm just so thankful. You did share about Johnny Hyde, and you know, there but for the grace of God, go I. I mean, it was truly heartbreaking to hear, and I heard people who had gone over to his apartment. And it's like, come on, please come out of the apartment and join us, and. You know, it's just tragic. And so I know that that kind of thing can affect people that way. And I'm thankful to the Lord that enough of it is in my environment. And, but it's a reality. I think there isn't a month that goes by I don't hear of someone that passes away. You know, I had a guy, I think he was the first guy that asked me to be his sponsor, and you know, his funeral was 6 months ago. Right? It's just a reality. But if I stick to what I'm doing, and I remember that I'm thankful for the gifts that God has given me, I don't feel self-pity, and my life is good. Thank you for calling up.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dave. I think we're, let's see. Yeah, so let's go ahead and we'll take a break and do our business meeting.